Hi, this is David, and I'm here with the incredibly handsome, if I must say, Brian Bloom.
Wow, that's nice. We're a good-looking dude.
Thank you. So, Brian, if you could please tell the audience just a little bit of your career, so what mm-hmm. you're sort of best known for.
I guess I've been involved in performing, acting, the entertainment industry. It's always a funny word since I was a young boy, really. I did Sergio Leone's last movie. I was in Once Upon a Time in America. I played one of the four little boys in that movie. And
that's awesome.
It's a movie that's aged well and fermented on the shelf and in the right way.
Yeah.
And my only regret when I talk about that is that I was too young to know some of the company that I was in terms of the impact, and it was one of these things where Sergio was had passed right around the time that I really became sort of a cinephile myself, and so but that's the thing that young actors have is they can act without being hung up on the rest of that stuff,
right?
So that said, I did that, and I was on a soap opera, an American soap opera for a long time called As the World Turns. And I did
We actually don't get that in Australia, which is a shame.
Probably not. maybe it's not a shame. I'm not sure. I don't know how that stuff, ages, on the show.
We did our Days of Our Lives and Young and the Restless for a very long time, and then they just stopped showing it.
Young and the Restless was a great show.
Yeah.
Or is a great show.
I think it still goes.
Yeah, it still goes.
It
never
does.
It's a genre that is in the throes of, let's say, passing.
Yeah.
But anyway... I've done parts in lots of different kinds of movies and different kinds of genres and guested on some of the more popular television franchises, your CSIs and your Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and I was just talking to one of your associates about my short tenure on the HBO series Oz, and that was a pretty awesome experience.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. And,
The show would be good, but in Oz itself would be pretty bad.
Right. Let's
Arabisi cellmate.
Yeah, or Maloney's like I was. It's not a place you'd want to end up in real life by any means. But that was like the dojo, the boxing gym of acting. It was really something, and for that to have been HBO's one of the first or the first. Series to do something that groundbreaking, that intense, that savage, that kind of the prison life, civil unrest.
Yeah.
Awesome, and it was a great honor and challenge to jump in to that atmosphere with those amazingly talented people. And great Tom Fontana's writing and trying to go toe to toe as best I could with guys like Maloney. Yep. It's really, really something.
Yeah. And how long were you on Oz for?
I think I did three or four. But they seemed to be fairly memorable with the folks. And it was definitely challenging for Brian, the man and the actor, to deal with some kinds of, and maybe it would be for anybody, but to deal with these kind of and homoerotic. Sort of psychosexual elements and sex as a tool of power and that kind of darker side.
Did you have to do some research in order to sort of before you started?
To be honest with you, it's not so much research as it is in that case. I think that sort of preparation was letting go and being free and open to doing something that is outside of oneself. And I think actors kind of want everybody to think that they're always, kind of doing all this character work. Mm-hmm. And that may or may not be true, and I have a lot of respect for people that are actually doing it. But something like that was going places that I've never gone in my own personal life. Most of us haven't been in prison, like we were saying before.
Yeah.
But, I don't sort of... you know, keep the company of boys and men on that level.
Yep.
So to have to express myself physically in the, you know, the sexual kinds of scenes with guys was not not simple.
Wow.
And it was very new to me, and haven't done anything like it. Hadn't done anything like it before or since. So it was.
Is that because it was so
no,
it's not.
No,
it's been that situation.
It just hasn't necessarily come up again. To actually do that, I've played other characters that are either gay or elements in that world. That show gave actors an opportunity to do things that just haven't really come up.
No.
It's like for that to have been their first one and to do it and to have had actors in scenarios, it must have been such a treat, such a challenge, and it was an inspiration to be around guys that were that untethered from kind of more classic narrative and characters.
And so you worked with Christoph. So was that before or after SVU?
It was at the same time. And I was always marveling at how he was playing this guy that the other guy would want to arrest and kill.
Yeah.
And well, both of them would want to kill each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one might use the more conventional elements of the law, and the other wouldn't.
Yeah.
But what a kind of dichotomy to him. Yeah. Yeah, it's just a tribute to a window into how amazing that guy really is, I guess.
Awesome.
And I had the pleasure of working with Joe Carnahan on several different projects, including being one of the working on the A-Team and playing Pike, the villain.
That's awesome.
It's a fun movie. It grows on you. A lot of people kind of talk about it because it had a serious afterlife in television and still does. You know, it's not like it was that long ago, but it's really had kind of your HBOs and things like that, and your movie channels have shown the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really grown on a lot of people, and
it's underrated. I think
it has its place.
Yeah. Well,
thanks. I can't say I disagree with that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody did such a terrific job, and I was also I wrote the script with Joe, so I didn't write that part of Pike for myself, and I don't think Joe wrote it. We didn't write it with me in mind in any way, so that was an interesting thing to come out of all of that.
So you also co-wrote the film as well.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, we had a great. We were working on, through a series of conversations, emails, and glasses of scotch and cigars, we started talking about some story and some characters that related, that were military-based. And when the project came up for Joe to possibly rewrite and direct, we were in the throes of something else at the time, and so a little bit of coincidence and serendipity, we ended up kind of putting that aside and taking some of that energy and where his head was at and where we were going with this other piece, and kind of putting it into the four guys that, you know, were the A-Team.
This is also, I don't need any more terrible questions. This is
really great. Oh, good. Well, it's always good to see you put that down. It either means this sucks I can't talk to you anymore,
we got something going on.
It's
just organic, just going through.
Good.
I know you from your voice work, obviously, which mm-hmm. we'll get to in a second. Mm-hmm. But I just looking at it, I'm just like, where have I seen you?
Part of this stuff is you know, these aren't necessarily the most. These aren't the highest profile things that have ever happened, right? But at the same time, like some of my other acting brethren and voiceover brethren, I'm not part of the kind of, you know, Twitterati,
yeah,
and that sort of shameless self promotion. And I don't say that with judgment. And unfortunately, it sounds like I am. It may be to my own detriment. But it's not something that I do much of, or really any of at this point. So part of that profile It doesn't. I come from a generation where it wasn't there, and many of us do. But I experienced a certain kind of quote unquote celebrity as a young guy, being on the soap opera and being in teen magazines and different things. And it wasn't like I was. I don't wake up every day seeking the spotlight or thinking that what I have to say should be important to you. But at the same time, if somebody's interested, I'd much rather have a one-on-one conversation that may translate to certainly more than one. But it's just not my style, and maybe one day it will be. Again, I have no judgment of the people that do it. In fact, I marvel at how great they are at it and how many people have monetized it and used it to their benefit. It's also, I've seen people kind of crash and burn and end up with, you know, in the weeds with their dicks in the dirt because they said too much or something they shouldn't say or went a little too far or ended up engaging in kind of verbal combat with a fan or a studio or a fellow writer or peer and exposing something, taking something too far maybe. But again, I don't know if any of that would happen to me. I'm not afraid of it. It's just not something that comes naturally to me. So that's my way of saying that I don't go out of my way to try to make sure that you know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But there are people who do, who make it, who are charged, who marshal that every single day, you know. Yeah.
It's not quite the same thing, but I really could picture you in front of a class at like NYU or something. Sort of teacher. I mean, you just have that sort of...
Wow, well,
that presence.
I'm not sure that they would agree, but it would be my pleasure. Listen, anybody, you know, it's nice to be able to... I've been doing this on some level for a long time, and it's nice to be able to have a voice and experience to articulate some sense of an experience. And I love talking to up-and-coming actors and voiceover artists and writers, and I'm constantly... I have, you know, my heroes I'm constantly learning from. And I think a lot of people focus on the technique.
Yep.
But what a lot of people, there's another technique, which is the technique of actually getting the work done, whatever that work is.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that would want to talk about the three-act structure, but what they maybe should talk about is getting to work on structuring something.
Wow.
And... there's a lot of resistance. Yeah. And you know, I'm a big fan of Stephen Pressfield, and he's written some great books about that, The War of Art and Do the Work, and in addition to his amazing novels, Gates of Fire and Legend of Bagger Vance and the film itself, and I'm just a big fan. And my head is kind of in that right now, realizing that there's a lot of conjecture, debate, fact and fiction about just a lot of conversation about the work, but there's not a lot of work getting done. And maybe we should kind of look at getting it done, getting it out there, like Pressfield says, you know, starting before you're ready.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm almost ashamed, but I have to ask. I don't know why it suddenly popped into my head after all that Jip Prince. Can we just go back to 18 for a second?
Yeah, man.
Obviously, you were using weapons and secret agent skills, and
yeah, like we trained. Were, you know, we trained
a lot of ass.
Amazing CIA guys.
Have you retained any of that knowledge?
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Sorry,
know
I know that was a very fanboyish question.
No, they're not. That's my wheelhouse right there, man. I've been studying and working combat for many years in terms of self defense, and I do a street fighting style called Bojuka, and I'm a sifu of that style. And I teach it myself, and I've taught law enforcement and learned from law enforcement. I was a reserve deputy sheriff with the Orange County, California Sheriff's Department for about a decade, and worked in the area of prison self-defense and all kinds of different things. So, in fact, maybe that's some of those, let's say, gears in my transmission are what maybe led to... among other things, maybe playing that role of Pike, you know. And
okay, well, can we just sort of a segue? Because one of my favorite scenes of the A-Team is when you're in the back of the car.
Yeah.
And Wilson Mm-hmm. I can't remember his last name. Patrick Wilson. And you just got this brilliant look on your
Lynch
face. When he turns around and you're uncuffed and you've kicked mm-hmm. his ass, mm-hmm. and you just got this brilliant look on your face, which leads me to your voiceover work. So we were discussing before, which is how it's hard for some actors to sort of move into voice work because of they can no longer sort of express themselves, mm-hmm. And so now they've just got their voice, really.
Yeah. And the other way around.
Yeah. Did you find anything like that?
I think when I was a kid, I used to. I used to fantasize about being like a DJ. You know, the way that DJs used to be. There's not really too many of them anymore, and
we're talking
caricatures of themselves. Yeah. But I'm talking like 70s DJs, and even 50s and 60s DJs, where their passion for the music. Like we have a guy in the States who wrote a great book called FM Waves, and Roger Waters actually used him on one of his records, kind of doing interstitials between the songs. His name is Jim Ladd.
Cool.
And anyway, he was a great hero, and that's the kind of if anybody knows who he is or you don't, look him up. Jim was the man, and he has an ex. Satellite show that I think is available worldwide. But wow. Anyway, for me, it wasn't like, hey, there's this new voice thing. It was that I had always wanted to kind of do that, and it was something I fantasized about. And I've been the kind of guy that I would recognize a voiceover in a commercial and think, oh, there's that actor. But it wasn't about quantifying that, you know, oh, he got this part, but it was about hearing his tone, you know, kind of interested in that all along. So the fact that there is or was a way to, that there is a voiceover industry and that there was a way to kind of do some of this stuff was really exciting to me and for some reason or another, not foreign I didn't feel like a fish out of water with it. That's not to say that the things that you said aren't entirely valid in terms of working a microphone and not having your eyes or your face or your body or your physicality. But there's a different thing. Like if you watch a behind the scenes of people doing a cartoon, right? Or even people doing kind of moving models for performance capture and that kind of thing, you see that they're... In fact... At this point, they're putting the dots on the body and looking for all of that movement again to go with that voice.
Yeah.
But south of that, you'd see a guy kind of holding himself steady to the microphone, but still kind of getting up on his tippy toes and moving his head and doing kind of silly things with his face. Maybe things that wouldn't work on camera, but that physicality is what it takes to convey... And draw up that energy to kind of do that voice, you know, do that sound. But if that same guy was playing that villain on camera in a costume, that stuff would never work.
Kind of silly, yeah.
Yeah, it would be totally.
I'm almost upset that I don't have a camera on you right now because you're even doing it right now, just
right.
talking to me. I mean,
right.
you're just very expression. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I guess the most famous example would probably be Robin Williams and his sort of behind the scenes sort of stuff on Aladdin.
Yeah,
because he's just. I mean, you can't rein in Robin Williams. So I mean, he was just all over the place. So mm-hmm. did you do a similar sort of thing as well? So did you sort of act out the part? Like, I mean, one of your voices was Captain America. So sorry for my obsession. Mm-hmm. But so I mean, did you actually throw the shield? Did you?
But again, steady, holding to the microphone, and it's not only about you. It's about the guy who's kind of running the board, uh-huh. and it's about what microphone is up there and what it can take.
Yeah.
And literally what it's designed for in terms of capturing sound. But sometimes what they would do is you would do the lines and you kind of go back and do those gestures and those movements and this kind of sound set. And sometimes they would do a general sound set that could be plugged into any number of generic places. Still done with passion and, you know, but it could be used, it could be pulled from the shelf. And, oh, there's a shield throw, as you mentioned. But more often, we would do fresh ones for every single one of them. And that, to me, was
cool. So you have like a library of stuff.
So there would be a library, but I get the feeling that the library was like a last resort and something that was done more out of protocol than out of the reality and practicality of using it. Or maybe it was practical to have it, but I get the feeling it wasn't used that much because we really would kind of, you know, stand there and you'd see people kind of doing versions of these fights, and you'd watch like a brilliant guy like Fred Tatasciore doing Hulk and doing Hulk fighting Red Hulk, and you'd see him playing both parts and kind of, you know, holding himself and wow, squeezing himself and struggling against himself, and you'd see the man, the actor, and the characters in the and not know where one ended and the other started. It was amazing to come to work every day and watch the, all of those other guys play those parts in that particular kind of iteration of the Avengers. It was I really looked forward to coming to work every day to watch Fred Tatasciore, to watch Chris Cox, to watch Rick Wasserman do Thor. It was great. It was great fun.
What is the difference between, so you've obviously done ADR work at all as well, so ADR mm-hmm. versus voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
ADR games seems to get a bit of a bad rap. It's like, oh, I've got to go in and do some ADR.
A lot of people struggle with it, and it makes you, depending on, you know, I think, you know what those guys probably mean, and I can't really speak for them, but from my own experience, the more you go back to, for technical reasons,
I see.
Kind of fix something that had blood and guts and
the emotion's gone.
Yeah, and that all of that energy and all of that kind of breath and that physicality that we're talking about, but where, you know, the guy's jumping over the bar and he's grabbing the guy, he's putting him in a rear naked choke and he's defending himself and he's grabbed the bottle and broken it and he's threatening somebody and the real guy is literally 30 feet away and they're doing the real shot and he's not yelling at nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, actors live for that. I think it's fair to say that's what they want to get out there and do is this, and I think some of us do our best work in that format, but not everybody.
Yeah.
And, so you feel like, oh, it's a shame to go back. And just like for you, if you get a great kind of live, candid moment with somebody perhaps, and then if, like, your battery stopped and you re-ask that question, it would be some form of heartbreaking to you, I would think.
It was very upsetting.
Right? Yeah, very upset. You know.
And also embarrassed, too.
You take what you do seriously. Yeah. You want to, and again, they're not doing it because anything maybe technically went wrong, but there's... In the editing process or the sweetening process or adding in the special effects or cutting or something like that, that particular take didn't have the good sound, but the performance was right, so here's the guide track, and you go in and do it again, you know?
Right.
And I think that's why actors come in and just think, oh, God, I'm tearing apart, you know? And then there's probably the ego side of it, which is like, you know, it was acting, brilliant, thank you, you know, and now they're going to come back.
But God gave me an acting
ability. Yes, yes. It'll never be as good as it was then. I think some performances have been, you know, kind of broken by bad ADR. We've seen it, you know, and some movies
there's
have
been some
have
shockers.
Made, yeah, yeah, and
so
others
spent
maybe
billions
have,
on the special effects and the ADR.
Maybe some of them have been fixed.
Yeah,
and maybe it's kind of like good plastic surgery where you don't know that it's happened, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So maybe there are examples. Maybe we've watched great love scenes or great fight scenes or great boss fights where a good portion of it was done that way, but it was done seamlessly. We couldn't find the zipper, you know, and so we don't know.
So we've touched on your voice work with the Avengers. Can you mention some of your other roles?
Sure. I've got coming up here. I've got just coming out in a couple of days. We're here in it's October 18th today. I don't know if that's okay to say for your thing or whatever,
fine.
But 2013. But I think next weekend we've got Batman Arkham Origins coming out, and I play Roman Sionis, Black Mask, in that. That's an
awesome.
Amazing franchise to be a part of, and
yeah.
He's a great character, Roman Sionis. He's, you know, a real gangster.
Yeah.
And... represents kind of an old school kind of a villain it's sociopathic but not psychopathic,
yep.
You know, the way that many of them became, and he's not a villain that the world has kind of put on the couch and wondered, you know, God, what made him this way, you know, which is kind of like the tenor of a lot of these things these days. So Although he does have an amazing backstory,
right.
And the story of the mask and all that stuff is actually heavier than maybe some folks may or may not know.
Yep.
But I've got.
And you taught all that beforehand?
I am, and of course, these resources are available, and I was a fan as well of many forms of Batman. It's hard not to be,
yep.
And have argued with myself about which ones are right and wrong and fair, and you know, whether it's the guy in the tights or Christian Bale or
all right, quick pop quiz.
Sure, man.
Ben Affleck, new Batman. What do you think?
You know, he's such an amazingly talented guy in his own right. Who am I to sit here and it's, I'm not copping out on the answer. Who am I to sit here and think
answer.
That he doesn't have the ability to bring something terrific to it,
yep.
One way or another? Maybe not the most obvious choice. But again, if somebody made the most obvious choice, isn't there another whole way to kind of...
Exactly.
To look at that and go, oh, come on, how creative is that? Or how interesting is that? You know.
Yeah.
So it's not something I followed really closely in terms of what the sides of the argument were, the kind of, you know, the party lines on that. But I know that it was a thing, and we should all be... A lot of the people who find themselves criticizing... work that they haven't even seen yet.
That's exactly it.
Ought to turn around and think to themselves, hey, wait a second, you know, this guy, most of us would hope to kiss the shadow of one, millionth of the contribution that he's made to the industry in his years already and more to come, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
So I'd fall on the side of, buy some popcorn, buy a hot dog if you eat meat, grab yourself a soda or a water,
just kick back and
watch the damn show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
see what you think then, and then have the conversation. But, yeah. We shouldn't be prejudiced about anyone or anything if we can, and that's another form of it,
yeah.
Is kind of prejudging what you think you're going to get.
Would
you have thought that he would have been the director that he's become?
That was exactly my point. That was my tweet.
Yeah, man, I'm with you.
I mean, my thing is, I mean, I'm not immune to it. I mean, I run a nerd culture podcast, so obviously I'm not immune to fanboys.
What is your audience must have some feelings about it? Do you know what their
I'm going to be asking that
their
question.
Their barometric pressure is?
We'll see how it goes, yeah. But the majority is sort of... I mean, my sort of take on it is everybody got really upset when Daniel Craig was cast as James Bond.
Look what happened.
Look how brilliant he was.
Yeah.
It's like, just give the man a chance. I mean, it's moving on. Yeah. Anyway, back to you.
Well,
those
guys are a tough act to follow.
No, you're perfectly fine. So some other voice work?
Another role that I've played that I think, made an impact and, again, been an honor and a pleasure to be a part of is playing Varric in Dragon Age. And
awesome.
We're working on the latest version now,
yep.
And he's going to be back to his sort of new version of his old tricks, but on a different level. And he's it's become a more kind of a serious world. And he's always been a guy who's quick with a joke,
yep.
But it's getting heavier out there.
Yeah,
for old Varric, and another character that had a great time being a part of is Matt Horner in StarCraft and StarCraft 2. And there are some people that are obviously incredibly obsessed with that entire franchise and everything else. And Matt, it's strange because he's around a lot of dysfunction.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a mission guy, but he holds. He kind of toes the line between, his romantic complications are also an issue.
Complications,
yeah. I think it's fair to say, right? Yeah, yeah. He's another guy that I've had a great time doing, and hope to do more of. If there's more of him in the future,
there'll be more.
I really liked Jackie Estacado.
Oh, did you do Jackie from the Darkness?
I played Jackie in the most recent. It was Darkness 2.
Yeah.
I played Jackie Estacado there, and
that was cool.
That was very, very cool. It was a very interesting way to kind of look at screen space,
yeah.
and to use it. in addition to it being, you know, such a cool character from the books in the game as well. But if you simplify it as that kind of mafia criminal blood,
yeah,
has, it's like the allegory speaks, grows right out of itself. You know, there's a sort of a monster inside, in this breeding, and it is in fact family in many cases that at least gives you the opportunity to continue the work of your crime family, right? That word family is built right into it. So the idea that your bloodline carries something in it, you know, whether it's, you know, these kind of giant alien kind of arms and this monster that's inside you, whether he physically manifests as you know, arms or if it's just that it's the diabolical nature of your savagery. But either way, you know, that it's kind of like two sides of that same coin. So that I think that's a really cool, I hope that they do more of that, whether I'm involved in it or not. I think that it has it's a natural to find a way to continue itself, no matter who plays the parts, no matter who the developer is or how it's published, or, you know, but that game has more to say, no doubt about it. And it was great. It was great, you know, to say what he said so far, you know, no doubt about it. Some of Jackie's monologues were pretty awesome, the interstitials that pulled it together.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, I was Kane and Kane and Lynch.
Yep. It's awesome.
I was, you know, Cleaver and some of the early Jack and Daxter. You know, I'm just picking out kind of interesting things from the... I've got in the reboot of Wolfenstein, I'm B.J. Blaskowitz.
I like how you've gone from the sort of psychotic, sociopathic sort of black mask to Kane, who, let's face it, is not all there, to Jack and Daxter.
Right, right. That's why I'm, you know... Yeah, exactly. I was... I've worked on a lot of the. It's been an honor and a pleasure and a great boost and inspiration for me in a lot of different ways to have been a part of the Call of Duty franchise for many years,
wow,
on both sides of it, Modern Warfare and Black Ops and.
Cool.
We've got Ghosts coming out here pretty soon, and I'm one of the Ghosts.
That's mad.
And I was, you know, my role with some of those folks there kind of grew. It was my pleasure to be able to work behind the scenes a little bit in the developmental process of that game as well, and
wow,
work on the story a bit. And
yep.
Of course, the final script was penned by Steve Gagan, Oscar-winning writer,
uh-huh,
and it was amazing to work with him. You know, the video games are. Have become an amazing vessel to tell story and to convey and portray narrative and characters.
Yeah.
And whereas at one time it was something we hoped for and thought, you know, was the it was like somewhere out there in the ether the dust will settle and this thing will find its stride and maybe be a way to do this. It is no longer the kind of orphaned stepchild of storytelling that it was maybe once looked at. I think
it's taken a lot more seriously now.
Yeah, and over an 8 or 20 hour game. And by the way, that 20 hour game or that 8 hour game might take somebody else 28 hours to play. So that it's a very interesting kind of metric to put to it. But anyway, a 20 hour game is that tells a story.
What's your favorite game?
Well, that's kind of interesting. You know, I was really impressed with the story and the performance in most recently in Last of Us. You know, was pretty amazing, and the voice actors,
amazing.
Some of those guys I know and I'm friends with, they did, you know, and Neil and Bruce. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to sit down or talk to them, but they're amazing.
No, I haven't. Yeah, it would be awesome.
It's a hyper shining example of marrying story and action and gameplay together.
Yeah, no, The Last of Us is brilliant. I've just recently finished BioShock Infinite,
mm-hmm,
and it just had a profound emotional reaction. And I'm pretty blasé. I'm an old man. Mm-hmm. So, but it just, I mean, it affected me so emotionally. And that was due to the characterization and the story and the brilliant voice acting and stuff like that. I just think voice actors bring just so much to the world of entertainment. They're just, and I think they're underrated. And I think it's a shame.
Because it's not just the, with all due respect for the voice actor, I think that maybe that's one of the most noticeably organic elements in something that doesn't have a lot of organica around it. Of course, there were people putting in thousands, tens of thousands of hours putting these things together. So yeah, their blood, sweat, and tears is in that work, but they did it with ones and zeros, you know, digitally.
Yeah.
So I think the voice might tend to stand out, not only because this is what you're listening to and this is how they're communicating a lot of what's happening, but it has a lot to do, you know, there are some voices that you're not really seeing, like BioShock, a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
So you're hearing a great voice, that's Troy Baker, but you're also, you're dealing with an environment, and there are many, many factors that are leading to the satisfying experience that are being had. And not to take away from any of them, but there's they're greater than the sum of their parts. So watching something like Call of Duty Ghosts grow and being a part of developing it on some level over the last couple of years, you know, I can't stress enough that the contribution of the animators and all of the work that all of the different teams and the leads and everybody is doing on multiplayer and Strike Force and Clan, CLAN missions and the campaign, these are brilliantly, mind-bogglingly talented folks. And it's just the voices are an easily accessible piece of you know, kind of carbon,
yeah.
Right? Life form that it's like, oh, a voice. I recognize a voice.
Yeah.
You know, but that voice is in a volume in a room that's lit and textured, and there's a lot of things that are giving you permission to get lost in the entire experience. So the voice is a big part of it, but there's a lot of other things that are unsung, but deeply important to building the whole thing. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. Yeah. Makes total sense.
Kind of like in a movie, you may not think about how brilliant that shot was, but that shot is part of what gave that actor a chance to shine, or that character a chance to shine, the set design and the props that were in his hand and the wardrobe he's wearing there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, and over the years I've only become more and more taken with how much expertise it takes to do these things, and since there is so much crap and so much shit and so much garbage out there, it's when it's done right.
Yeah. It's to be celebrated.
Yeah, man.
Appreciated.
Yeah, totally.
What would you say would be sort of your favorite sort of elements of sort of the in front of the camera, motion capture, voice, writing?
I think motion capture, which is, you know, maybe is more fair to call it performance capture, for when they're really, because there's guys getting out there and they're making a tremendous contribution, just kind of doing their bodies, and then maybe sometimes the rest of the performance is being done in the booth, and it might be a different person or it might be any number of people that are contributing to the build of one character. Performance capture quite often
like
is really
circus sort of stuff.
Right, is like is the guy that you're doing, like with BJ, they're capturing your face, they're capturing your eyes, and they're getting voice during the entire performance process,
right,
in the volume while you're wearing the dots in the suit.
Really? So they record your voice while you're
all of
doing
it, and attempting, and in their case successfully keeping an awful lot of that.
Wow.
Most of it, in fact. Very little of it's being redone, like that ADR conversation we were having before.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's designed to be redone. But in this case, it's designed to get as much on-the-set content captured and used and put into the game as possible. And they're one of the examples, at least that I've worked on, that looks like it's going to be the most successful at that. I'm not talking about the performance of the game in the marketplace. I mean in terms of capturing it and using it.
Yeah.
And performance capture is amazing because it's pulling all of it together. It's the voice and it's the stunts and it's the martial arts and it's the gunplay and it's the and yet it's like playing cops and robbers as a kid because it's the set. There is no window. There is no table. There is no money on. There are no cards. There might be the gun and there might be the gun rack, but it's not really a gun rack. And the door is not a door, you know. And the car is not a car. And it has no wheels. It has no engine. And so, again, testament to all of those elements coming together and putting in that car and putting in that paint and putting in that sound and putting in those tires and marrying those tires to that material that is that road or that desert or that. It's just, it's incredible what these people are doing, you know. There's nobody filming any car, you know.
No, yeah. What was your favorite role so far, if you even have one?
That's really hard to say. Yeah. I don't know if I would say the thing that's kind of made the most impression on me is being a part of the Call of Duty franchise for so many years, and right up to and including, you know, Ghost coming out here. But I have a special place in my heart for Steve Rogers and for that Captain America. Again, not only because of maybe what I was doing with him and what Adam was doing with the writing and everything else, but what everybody was bringing a certain kind of A-game. The animators, the storylines, the way it was being recorded, we all came together and did it at the same time.
Oh, cool.
And they try to do a lot of that, but they're not always successful these days. A lot of people are pulled in a lot of different directions, but for some reason that one, everybody kind of, most people showed up and made themselves available or just worked out that way, whatever kind of kismet, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was awesome, like I said, to watch Fred Tatasciore and to watch some of these guys do their stuff was a real major, major treat. You know, I think Eric Loomis's Iron Man was fantastic. You know, yes, he sounds a lot like Robert Downey Jr., which is, you know,
it's kind of hard to hard to avoid, though, isn't it? Really, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, really.
I mean, yeah. I mean, some people just kind of, you know, the dish runs away with the spoon in some of these cases, and
there's gonna be a lot of trouble when the contract negotiations come up. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be like,
yeah.
I really don't want to take up too much of your time. This is magnificent. Like I said,
great, man.
Yeah, I just asked the.
We came here. I came here to all the way to the other, you know, to the down under here. To this is the subject matter we came here for. Yeah. So it's my pleasure to talk about it. But it's not. I, you know, talking about myself is not the most exciting thing. But this subject matter turns me on too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of these. I'm a form of this nerd culture, you know, thing, a contributor and a card carrying member, you know.
That's awesome. Guys, that's the ultimate NCP question. You ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
If you were doing this interview, what would be the one question that you would want asked?
Well, it's less the question and more the opportunity to shed light on. My experience tells me that, like we were talking about with tweeting and everything else, that it's not a me based thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I joke with my friends about the me hotel and how there's no vacancy for anybody else in that hotel, you know. And I hope that interviews like this or I get an opportunity to talk about some of the stuff that when it's over, what you hear is how much respect I have and how much I want you to know, whether I respect it or not, how much amazing talent there is out there and how many elements there are going into that. And had you not asked the kind of questions that would give me the opportunity to say that, then I would have said, well, let's talk about, you know, what does it take to make a game grow, or what does it take, you know. But we found a way to touch on that, so I hope that's a reasonably satisfying answer.
That's
to
totally
you
fun.
Yeah, is that it's an amazing industry to work in, and it's emerging, but it's also emerged.
Yeah.
And it's really finding its way and setting the stage, and I think movies are going to have to, with all due respect for films, and I'm a screenwriter myself and a fan of movies, but let's face it, the 20-hour experience with you controlling elements of the outcome and having a different outcome, or playing with your friends and having it be different on Thursday night than it was on Tuesday night, and having that go until Friday morning, and you know, and dragging yourself through broken glass to get through school in order to come home and play more, if it's in a right-sized way and not wrecking your life, that's a pretty damn immersive experience. And I used to get asked years ago, people would say in the beginning of some of the voice stuff, people would say, when do you think games are going to get the respect or catch up, you know, with kind of movies? There's kind of this chasm between them. I don't see anybody asking that anymore.
Exactly.
You know? So that the answer to the question then was, with time, maturation, and with a couple more years of a couple more development cycles, I think the question is almost the other way around now.
Yeah.
You know, will movies be able to continue to offer a level of entertainment, immersion and excitement and anticipation, and that can match what happens in a game? And with a generation of young people controlling the outcomes of their entertainment and picking their character and picking his vehicle, if it's that kind of game, and painting it the way they want it and picking the track they race on, yeah, allegorically and literally. How are you going to go back and just have somebody control all that for you?
Exactly.
You know? It doesn't make it out of the question, but come on.
This has been amazing.
Great, man. Let's leave it on that note.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
It was awesome talking to you. Thank you very much. It's been absolutely
this was fun.
I mean,